If you only listen to our podcasts, I want to encourage you to visit unfetteredmind.org. Here you'll find, free of charge, dozens of original articles and contemporary translations of Buddhist texts and prayers. If you find these helpful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can continue to expand the website and support your practice. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, Buddhahood Without Meditation, Part 6.
Okay, we have a couple of items to take care of with respect to view, and then we'll start talking about practice. First thing is the notion that you're going to get anywhere. There are any number of stories which point this out. One of them, I can't remember all the details, but it goes something like, a man is told that there is a treasure of inestimable value, and that if he journeys to such and such a land, a person will tell him how to locate it. So he journeys to that land. It's a long and difficult journey.
Can you speak up a little bit, please?
Yeah. So he journeys to that land and finds the man, guru, whatever. And he says, oh, I can't help you, go and see this person. And he goes off and wanders all over the place and has all kinds of difficulties and finally locates this person. And the guy says, oh yeah, I know about all of that, but I'm not the one to help you, you need to go to this person. And he ends up going to one after another, more and more remote regions, more and more difficult trials, more problems. And finally he gets to the last person. He comes and meets this guy and says, so tell me where this fabulous treasure is. And the person looks at him and says, there's a tree in your backyard. It's dying. You should take care of it. What? Yeah. What about this treasure? That's all I have to say. So what does he get? What's he got? He's gone to everybody and is told this tree in his backyard is dying. So there's nothing, he's got nothing left to do. And so he starts the very, very long journey home, unlocks his house, settles in, goes into his backyard, and yeah, there's the tree. Hadn't thought about much. And
His guy's right. He is dying. It's a problem with it. Looks like it's not, something's wrong with its roots. So he starts digging the roots of the tree and finds this fabulous gold treasure. So that's one story about this. Yes, Anita. So, I mean, T.S. Eliot expresses this as the end of our journey will be to return to the place that we started from and not for the first time. More poetically expressed, my preference is a little different. By now, all of you know, at least theoretically, that there's nothing outside you that's going to save you. Yes?
I don't know that.
You may leave. You're still looking for something outside to save you, Carolyn?
Well, there's hope, isn't there? But you took that away last night.
And this dies very hard, and there are many, many layers. How many of you believe there's something inside you that could save?
What do you mean by save?
Make everything right. Well, if you don't, pardon?
Sort of.
Okay. Well, if you don't think there's something inside you that can save you, what are you doing here?
Nothing.
Stop nagging, Mark.
Did you say nothing?
What?
Okay.
Right. Okay. So, how many of you are looking for the right experience? Well, let's be honest here. One, two.
Sustained right experience.
Well, you put whatever qualifications you can on it. Three.
Four.
Five. Six. Seven. What do you think this experience is going to do for you? Yes, Carolyn?
Sorry.
What are you laughing at?
Yes, sir.
I would like to die in peace.
Okay, so if you can have the right experience, then you can die in peace.
No, the experience is not having a whole lot of regrets and so on at death.
Just dying in peace is the experience.
Yeah.
That's the one you're looking for.
That would be cool, I think.
Well, we'll just have somebody murder you while you're asleep.
Die in peace then.
Exactly, done. Is that what you want?
I mean,
is that what you came here for? Is to be murdered in your sleep? I don't think so.
Dying in peace and being murdered in your sleep are not exactly the same thing.
Got to check with Anne about this. She's not so sure.
Are they the same?
I think, you know, being murdered in your sleep, you might die in peace. I don't know. I don't know about that.
You don't, so you don't really want to try that route.
If it was peaceful,
none of this is very interesting.
The ends justify the means if it was peaceful.
but you know, she doesn't get to come back. That wasn't peaceful. Do you ever watch Monty Python?
Yes.
It's a bit like the £5 for a 2-minute argument. Do you remember that one? No, he comes in and says, I'd like an argument. £5, please. £5. Room 3. He goes in.
Oh, yes.
What are you here for? I want an argument. What, he can't have one? But I paid my £5. I should have to be able to have an argument. I'm sorry, you can't have an argument. It goes on like this. Then ding, you're at time's up. But we didn't have an argument. Yes, we did. But that wasn't the argument I wanted to have. Yeah, there you have an argument, Paul. Well, that's like being murdered in your sleep. You don't get to come back and say, well, that wasn't the one I wanted.
I don't get to come back.
You don't get, you know, well, that wasn't the experience I wanted. That didn't work. You're dead.
Yeah, well.
As long as we're peaceful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm dead and it's peaceful.
Okay, that's what you want? You should be able to arrange that quite easily. And if you can't, then go to New York or Los Angeles. But it's very easy to arrange there. Portland, I hear, too. But that's not really what you want, is it? She's thinking about it. Okay. Anybody else? What do you think this experience is going to do for you?
Oh, wait a minute. That's a different... I didn't understand the question.
Ah.
I didn't understand the question as being, what do you think this experience is going to do for you?
This experience that you're looking for is going to do for you.
No. Anyway.
Yes.
Deeper, satisfying connection with my life. More intense, more clear.
But you can just have the right experience than all the...
No, problems. Ongoing.
Ongoing. Yes, Helen?
That's not a one-shot deal. It's making sense.
Yeah, I know. It gets a little tricky, doesn't it?
But it can't be permanent. Nothing can be permanent. The way you want it.
Yeah, we run into a few obstacles there, don't we? So, nothing inside, nothing outside which is going to save you. Nothing inside which is going to save you.
Has that been established? Or are you just jumping over that?
Well, what is there inside you that could possibly save you, Frank?
I'm not going to argue with, because I actually agree with you on this, but I wonder, you had people hold up their hands here. So I think
okay.
You need to satisfy these people.
They haven't had their argument yet.
Okay, Cindy.
Sure, love that.
What is there inside you that could possibly save?
I don't think there is anything anymore.
That was quick.
Well, because it pretty much demolished that one right sustaining experience that makes everything, you know, like, great, so.
So now what are you going to do? Leave here and go into total depression for the rest of your life?
Possibility, not a nice one, but...
Just say, well, there's nothing to do, so there's no point in doing anything.
Well, that's part of what we talked about earlier. Right?
Yeah, so what are you going to do? What's that going to do? That just sounds like, you know, just living your life, and that's that. What's the difference?
That's a question I'm pondering, actually.
Yeah. Donna.
I think the premise of the question is flawed in that we're not talking about being saved. I mean, I think that if we look at this, the inner work, it's a series of processes and a series of experiences that without any ultimate goal of being saved, like going to heaven.
So why are you doing this?
That the quality of living and being more alive and more attention as you go through the process is called life. So it's a quality of life issue.
So you're practicing so you have a higher quality of life.
A what?
You're practicing so that you have a higher quality of life.
Well, a less reactive quality of life.
Okay. So, a better life.
I guess according to my definition for a better is.
Yeah, better is less reactive for you. Okay, so, you're not reactive at all now. What do you do now?
I'm not reacting.
Yeah, I know. So I'm just asking you a question, but you're not going to react to this question. So, what do you do now?
Well, one would think...
Anne's going to help you here.
Good.
Keep going, Donna. Could you can play tag wrestling with Anne. You just tag her and she'll take over when you're ready. So, keep going for the time being.
If I'm not reacting, that's what... my understanding from last night's teaching was the goal of this path or these teachings is to be in a state of complete attention all the time.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you want?
I think that would be nice. I'm not sure.
Actually, I don't think it's very nice at all. That's another matter.
It would be desirable.
Okay. So there is somewhere you want to go.
Somewhere?
Yeah, you want to go to the state of total non-reactivity.
Okay.
What do you do when you get there?
Just be.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
And what's involved in being?
Depends on what comes up.
Oh. So you just respond to whatever arises.
Right.
What sort of meaning is there in this?
Well, if I'm not reacting and I'm just in attention, then I don't have the need to assign meaning. That's where the faith comes in that whatever's going on is going on and that's it.
So you're going to watch the world go to ruin, poverty, pollution, all that. I'm being really unfair here, but
I can make choices about. Well, now I'm back. I'm back in the corner. I'm going to tap in.
Everyone just wants to be tapped.
And I'm not a bear. Donna was actually expressing what I was trying to express when I said that I like to dine in peace.
Yeah.
Okay.
By not, you know, mapping out reactivity in the world. And I probably guess that there are a lot of people in this room who have spent a lot of years doing work in which they felt they were trying to, you know, be useful and help others. And they've seen how difficult it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if probably what would motivate a lot of people in this room, no, well, speaking for myself at the minimum,
okay,
would be...
speak up a little bit.
If there were less reactivity, it would be more likely that we'd be able to actually do something useful. So I guess if I were, you know, less reactive, then...
So you ought to be less reactive so you can do something useful.
Yeah, and help others.
Okay. How do you feel about that, Donna?
I guess that was my assumption that if I am in that state, that it will, that energy will be a positive, have a positive impact.
Yeah.
On other sentient beings. Was that the noose?
The noose? Where did the noose come from?
Then I just hang myself.
Oh! Well, I think we have to go a little further here. Is it possible to make a difference in the world?
I think it's possible to be of service in the world without the expectation of a specific result.
How many others go along with that?
There's a problem.
What's the problem, Carol?
Well, if there's no inside, no outside, and not two,
mm-hmm,
then who are the others? And can you really make choices? It can feel like you make choices.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of choices that they're talking about wanting to make aren't choices.
What are they?
What comes from really experiencing a situation?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens. That's what...
Oh, so are you saying that the more aware you are, the less choice you have?
Yes, I am, unfortunately.
Well, unfortunately, I don't know.
The way you say it is what makes it sound unfortunate. Yes, that's exactly what I mean. And I mean it like it happens in emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
You're not making choices.
Mm-hmm. And when you have a high degree of expertise, you see exactly what to do, and there isn't much choice about it.
Mm-hmm.
In any field, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, sounds like you're suggesting that when you're fully aware, you lose the illusion of choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, is that what you're going for, a totally choiceless life?
I've never put it that way myself. But,
after career. Actually, this is a choice.
I actually have lost my career. I don't know, Cameron. I'm stuck here because I still want to believe in that.
And the myth is?
A fifth theory is complete Buddhahood with no remainder.
Ah! Claudia, you're clenching your jaw.
Just because she's smart.
No, she betrayed herself. What do you have to say about this?
No agent, no choice.
Well, so you think there is somewhere to go?
No, actually I'm giving it up and it's beautiful.
Okay.
But no choice, yes, that is real to me.
Okay. So we're covering the central points that I wanted to cover here. The idea that there is something outside, inside, or some kind of experience that's going to make everything just hunky-dory. That we actually have any choice about all of this. All of these ideas we hold very deeply, cherish. But they, as you see, they don't really hold up under any examination. In order to rest completely, one also has to let go of the idea or come to terms with the idea that there is nothing other than what we experience right now. And any idea of anything else is the projection of a wish. One sense, that sounds very negative and very depressing. In another sense, it's a kind of freedom. Because every bit of our energy that goes to some expectation or goal is that much that taken away from experiencing the only thing that we can know, which is right now. This is why the meditation instruction, which we're going to talk more about in a few minutes, is just recognize what is happening right now. And it's very important to note that the verb there is recognize, not observe. Thought arises, you recognize that, what happens?
It's stout.
What happens to you?
It can hear you.
It loses its spell.
Loses its spell.
Spell, oh.
But what happens to you, Larry?
When I recognize thought.
Just recognize you.
Something in me pauses.
Mm-hmm. Can you say a bit more about that?
That rather than my attention being eaten by the thought, it becomes available.
Okay. Could I interpret that as there's a kind of waking up? Okay. What happens when you recognize that you're resting?
You recognize what?
That you're resting.
Resting?
I'm awake.
What happens then? Anybody? Nava?
Keep it resting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Nava, what do you say?
Sorry.
Well, whenever you experience something fully, then it's, that's it. Then you don't need more than that. No? I mean, not that I haven't been lost, but that is okay.
Yeah. There you are, resting. You don't know. What happens? And if you know this experience?
Well,
Carol, what happens?
I stop resting.
Do you?
Yeah. Most of the time.
Then you start thinking?
I'm actually sometimes startled.
Yeah.
And then there's the commentary.
Describe the startle.
I've divided into two or something.
Okay.
And there's surprise.
Describe the experience of surprise.
Well, it's a pulling away of the tension.
That's later.
Okay, well, first there's energy that goes up. That's
okay.
My physical experience.
And what do you experience right there?
It's actually a deepening for a moment.
Thank you.
Didn't hear that.
What?
Say it again.
It's actually a deepening for a moment, and then I pull away.
Yeah. Can you rest in the recognition?
I'll work.
Yeah. Very different from observing. Very different. Donna.
I feel like we didn't come to closure on.
I'm going back there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because actually, from what Carolyn said, I thought Anne and I were saying the same thing, just with different words, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm confused.
What are you confused about?
Well, you kept pushing to, okay, so if you get to a place of your complete attention, then what? What are you doing? And we were saying you're not doing anything, and then that's what they're saying is you're not doing anything. And so, or they're saying there's no choice. So I'm just confused with that and this concept you talked about last night of Buddhist ethics, which is making a decision around what brings you peace of mind. So,
what's the confusion?
I think you could tell me if, I mean, a candidate for confusion can be that we think of resting as an experience itself, rather than resting in our experience. So we try to get to this experience called resting, rather than meeting what arises, which is what you were saying actually before. Is that?
I'm not sure that's. I guess my confusion is just from your original question of.
Started off by saying we all want to get somewhere.
Right.
And when we examine that, the notion of getting somewhere actually starts to fall apart in any one of a number of ways which you want to just explore. Another part of the view is letting go completely of the notion of getting somewhere. So I was pushing it in various ways. You follow? That notion of getting somewhere can manifest as trying to achieve some ideal state in the world, some ideal relationship with the world, some ideal state in ourselves, but it all comes down to the same thing. We're setting up an expectation and a goal. How many of you have done this? Yeah.
But you know, if you were to, you could also set a goal of accepting things as they are, and that can never happen too. I mean, it goes up and down.
Exactly. Yeah. Any idea of a goal is going to cause us inevitably to appraise our current experience in terms of that goal. Carla, from Marsha.
I'm dreading my lip read, my hand a little. I just did that in a very tiny way today because I was sitting and thinking, this my bummer. And then I just thought, you gotta be here until 6 a.m. tomorrow. And it really helped me to relax. Okay, sorry.
No, keep on.
Just the idea that I, in my mind, I set a different sitting time goal helped me to relax. So instead of thinking, you know, how many minutes, I only have 10 minutes left, I just thought, you're not going anywhere for a long time.
You just took all that short-term goal out of the picture completely.
Yeah, and it helped me to relax.
Okay. Marcia?
Well, I've been thinking about useless plans, stop all useless plans. I noticed there's a qualifier in there of useless. So.
What kind of truck are you going to try to drive through this loophole?
Let's say planning, there was a lot of planning that went into the retreat. The goal of having a retreat.
Utterly useless.
Because nothing's happening.
No one on this earth has ever escaped death. Even now, one after another, people pass away. While I too will have to die soon, I close my heart and prepare to live for a long time. Guru, think of me, look upon me quickly with compassion, give me energy to stop useless planning.
Trying to cheer us up.
Temporary loophole.
It's one of the things that really. It's one of the things that people find infuriating about Buddhists. They're always talking about, you know, suffering and death, and yet they're always laughing. Just, okay. Well, how do you understand this?
Well, I'm confused about it.
Oh. Well, what it's one way to read what it's saying here is that, what's the Kabir saying? Yes. If you're going to go to sleep anyway, why do you bother rearranging the thoughts?
Did you not have a choice? Was useless planning? Did you set a goal of having a retreat?
Well, I think what Gottfried's talking about is we set up goals in our lives to achieve this, achieve that, and achieve that. What happens to all of those things after we die?
House of Cards.
Exactly. Mm. Yes.
What comes to mind is the example from Zen Kitchen.
Yes. Yeah.
Didn't hear that. Frank.
The example.
Could you explain both the, what do you mean by House of Cards and
House of Cards,
and
it means that you know, you do all of this stuff. I mean, what is it? I didn't bring. You ever read the poem Ozymandias? Two great and legless trunks of stone stand in the desert. And it's about the statue that's crumpled. And all that's left is the head and a couple of other things. And on the head there's this sneer of cold command, I think is the phrase. And the caption, and at the base of the statue there is a... carved in the rock, there is a what's it called? An
inscription.
Inscription, which says, "Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair." And there's nothing but desert all around. So, and it's a wonderful poem by Shelley called Ozymandias, and. That's what I think Marcia was referring to, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Zen Kitchen is that Frank is referring to. This is a very good book called, it's now published under the title How to Cook Your Life. There are at least two books by that title. The one you're interested in is Uchiyama, not Bernie Glassman. And the... Uchiyama, I think. You can order it through on Unfettered Mind's website. Just find it there and click on it. It'll take you right to Amazon. and then he gives the example of when such and such has been done, then tomorrow's gruel can be prepared. Tomorrow's gruel, the gruel or soup can be prepared for tomorrow. And Uchiyama makes a point here. In this very simple phrase, the whole way to approach life is captured. Because when you start preparing the soup for tomorrow, you actually have no idea whether the soup will ever be served. Because there could be riots, earthquakes, fires, mudslides.
Don't tell this to the cook.
Pardon?
Don't tell this to the cook.
No, this is, I live in Los Angeles. We have this all the time. mudslides, riots, fires, earthquakes. Freeway jams. At the mall. I remember the earthquake in 94, was it? That's the one, right? No. Yeah, and it's sleeping. Earthquake. Strong earthquake.
Very
strong earthquake. Thump! Good. That television may be broken. Oh, it seems to be over. Go out to the living room. It's 4:30 in the morning, go out to the living room. Damn, television's not broken. Go back to sleep. Yes, Dan?
I'm really going to step in here. But aren't you setting up resting as a desirable state?
No, I'm not. Let me finish here. Pardon?
You fooled me.
The resting is a means, not an end.
Yeah,
I will in a minute. Let me finish responding to Helen first. So he says, you don't know whether you're ever going to serve the soup. So if you become attached to the notion of serving the soup, you've set up a goal. You prepare the soup this evening because that's tonight's work. And he says, this is the only way to live in the absolute paradox, which is the human condition, that things have a certain order and sequence, and we have no idea whether it's going to be disrupted by death. So one we have the evolution of actions, karma, and the other is we have death can come at any time. And the only way to live in that paradox is to do things as today's work, or the work, the activity in the present, this is what Donald was referring to, without setting up any goal of actually achieving or having a certain result. Okay. To Dan's point. If we take what I just described to Helen, being able to live that way, which is not resting. In order to be able to live that way, we have to let everything fall away. Now, we do that by resting. In a certain point, we come to be able to rest in what we are doing. So it just continues, we don't actually have to be doing sitting practice. But we learn how to do this by just sitting. And all of the things come up when we do this. I need to be productive. I need to make a difference in the world. I need to prove myself to so-and-so.
I need to be entertained.
I need to be entertaining. All of these things come up. And all our idealism, all our beliefs come up. And there they are, pulling and pushing and trying to get us to move out of just being right there. So it's a means.
I think that's a very important point, because otherwise it could be, because of the English word, it could be confused as an end state.
Exactly. What I'm discussing right now is view, letting go of all of these ideas, which creates the possibility of resting. So I think I've taken care of everything I wanted to. Oh, no, not quite.
You know, it would prevent disappointment if we could do this, but shouldn't there also be a way of dealing with disappointment if we can't always do it? You know, be in the present?
Yeah, that's an experience too. Can you be in that experience?
Bring it to the present moment.
Yeah. Oh, I failed again. Now, most people, when they slip out of attention, they reach around and get a nice big baseball bat and go, thunk, 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 thunk. they get very critical of themselves. The other possibility is just to be in the experience of disappointment, in other words, to continue. Most people prefer to beat themselves up, though. Okay.
I'm sorry, Miss, did you say there was an end? The means was the resting, was there an end?
The end was what I was discussing with Helen. To be able to put it in slightly different words. To be and it's what Donna was raising earlier. Responding to what is arising in the present without setting up attachment or goals for the future. Now, here is a traditional description of this. Ultimate Vajra emptiness is the space in which all experience, patterned and free, that's to say, samsara nirvana, manifest in specific forms that come and go. And that ultimate Vajra space refers to the coming and going in that ultimate Vajra space is what is represented by Vajra Dakini. Ratna Dakini, which means jewel Dakini, refers to all aspects of timeless awareness and enlightened qualities occurring naturally, similar to a treasure house of precious jewels. Lotus Dakini refers to the aspect of freedom from all attachment. Karma or action Dakini refers to the aspect of all activities of the spontaneous, all activities of the spontaneously present kayas and timeless awareness occurring naturally, not created or accomplished through effort. So I'm going to abbreviate that one. Action Dakini refers to the aspect of all activities being neither created or accomplished through effort. That is, they arise naturally. Page 127. Since emotional and cognitive distortions are cleared away in basic space, and the scope of timeless awareness and enlightened qualities unfolds, there is Buddha. And Dakini refers to the way in which all sensory appearances manifest as specific forms that come and go within the expanse of space. So the term Dakini, which means traveler in space or movement in space, refers to the movement of all sensory appearances in supreme emptiness. The ground aspect, to gain true independence. I have a little trouble with the translation of that. It's a very difficult term to translate. Through the natural premise that the ground aspect of awareness is the essence in which all of the highest spiritual principles unite, is to take the way of abiding as the unsurpassable ultimate refuge. So it's refuge. Throughout a beginningless series of lifetimes, the scope of your intellect has been severely limited by conceiving of yourself as truly existing and by fixating on sense objects. Now that you've reached the decision that samsara and nirvana are all a magical appearance of a single awareness, the scope of your ordinary awareness has grown. This is the most sacred of all meanings of arousing awakening mind, or bodhicitta. So, these are very deep interpretations, but these are really what... our practice is about.
Dumb question. What is the samsara nirvana result expression of a single awareness? What's making the difference?
Presence or absence of ignorance.
So just that ignorance just that. Go to samsara.
Yeah, first page of Jewel Only. Let's translate this into English. That's interesting. Here, the Tibetan says it somewhat differently, I think. Refuge is to see, I'll just say see at this point, that, or view that, all the qualities of being awake are present in natural awareness. So, there's nothing outside or inside to save you, just awareness itself. And then, bodhicitta
is not inside?
Well, we went through that the other day. Is it inside or outside?
Oh, you mean because of the sound and all that? Both.
Yeah, you can't say where it is. Bodhicitta, that is awakening mind, is awakening to the experience that everything you experience, samsara nirvana, is, as the usual translation here is, the play of awareness. Now, what this means, let your mind grow quiet. We did, I think we did this last night or the night before, I can't remember. And float the thought of a flower. And you look at that thought. What is its relationship with your mind? Anybody? Carolyn?
An expression in your mind?
What does that mean? It's an expression of mind. What does that mean, Carolyn? I mean, we have expressions in, like, I wrinkle my face, that's an expression.
No.
So is it like mind wrinkling or something like that?
No, I mean like a
mind.
I like that idea.
Getting on.
Maybe it's getting young.
The manifestation.
So is it something that is separate from mind? Like it comes out of mind, now it's, you know, here's mind, here's the manifest. What do you mean?
Oh, I have an image.
Anybody else?
Well, it's like, you know, it's like if you plant a seed and there's a flower.
So it's something grows out of mind. Anybody else? Eugene.
From what we talked about last time, it is mind.
Mm-hmm. right, it is mine. Now, when you experience, awakening mind is knowing that everything you experience is mind in the same way as that thought is. Now, they're very, the link to the more traditional notion of, incidentally, that's why Gunter translates awakening mind and kindly bent to Jesus as consummate limpid clarity and consummate perspicacity. Pardon? Yes. Oh, well, he's Austrian. You have to forgive him.
So,
the link here to the traditional notion of awakening mind as union of emptiness and compassion . If the thought of a flower is your mind, its nature is necessarily empty. Okay? That's the emptiness aspect. The compassion aspect is that it is your mind. And what I mean by that is that there's no sense of other. And in another sense, the only thing you can do is be with it. Be with or in, properly speaking, in the experience. That's the essence of compassion, to be in the experience of what's arising. When we're present with someone who is suffering, the essence of compassion is to be in that experience of pain. From there, the possibility of appropriate response is possible. Because if we're not in that experience of pain, then we all likelihood will seek to control it or diminish it in some way because of our own discomfort. Art.
This might be a sidetrack, so if you want to take it for later, that's fine. And you and I have talked about this briefly in the past. Is some of the concern about, for lack of a better word, social activism centered around the fact that it is not in the moment, that it's responding to an agenda other than what's actually occurring?
Yes, actually, I would agree with that. I put it slightly differently. One of the concerns I have about social activism is it is based on the notion that it's possible to create an ideal world. And some of the reading I've been doing lately, this is a relatively, in the history of mankind, it's a relatively recent notion, and actually finds its beginning in the late 18th, early 19th century. And one can lay communism, fascism, Nazism, radical Islam, etc., all at the doorstep of the same notion.
True.
It's possible to create an ideal world. Okay.
I'm curious how the word play is used.
Yeah, the word Tibetan in Tibetan is Rolpa. And there are various metaphors which are used. Just to take one, be familiar, you hold up a crystal, light shines through it, spectrums all over the place. That's the play of light. You look in a lake or an ocean, and you see the reflections of the stars. That's the play of the ocean.
So is samsara nirvana is the play of awareness.
It's the play of awareness. All experience is the play of awareness.
The samsara bit doesn't feel so playful.
No. But again, in your year when we did this in the last retreat, we had this mirror here. Reflections of the play of the mirror. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that one later. Okay. Now,
I also think that a real key thing to deal with is resistance, because that's the very thing that gets us caught up in suffering.
And what do you do?
We can't always go directly to our experience.
And what do you do with resistance?
It blocks us from it.
What do you do with resistance?
We are fighting it.
Yeah, that's what we tend to do.
Yeah.
In this approach, what is resistance?
It is pushing the experience away. It's not.
Yeah, but what is resistance?
Ignoring your mind.
What is resistance? Okay. When you say resistance, what are you referring to?
To the experience that, I mean,
to
if go, we
could
just include
to the experience of
pain, say.
Okay, so it's a resistance. It's an experience.
Yeah.
Rest in that experience.
Okay.
Is it? Yeah. It's just another experience. It's easy to say that. It's not so easy.
It sounds all right. Yeah.
Not so easy to do. Okay. But that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's an experience. I'll give you another piece here. All right, could you stand right there, please? Pardon?
It's
for our heart. For our heart, yes.
Not so
okay. No, you're supposed to. Okay. So, art's going to be the resistance. You know what that means?
You
just don't move.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Okay? That's what it's looked like, okay? Now, what's going on? I'm pushing. Art's not moving. I view art as resistance. Okay? Now, we'll go back. How do you view me, art?
A force.
So how do you view me?
Something that's pushing.
Something's pushing, right?
Yes.
What we call resistance is actually part of is a system in which we have identified with a piece that wants to move. We could equally as well identify with the piece that doesn't want to move, and then we would experience something pushing us. In Mahamudra and Dzogchen, what we do is we don't identify with either. So when you're experiencing resistance, experience the part that doesn't want to move and the part that does want to move. I think it's very interesting.
I like the distinction between experience and identify with.
Okay. Just give me a sec to find this, please. Okay. So now we're going to start talking about how do you practice halfway through the retreat. It's about time. For those of you who have the text, 157. Not that it will help you much. I mean, it's very simple. Anybody can do this. Gaining mastery within the supreme and timeless primordial ground by awakening to it and opening to it in all its immediacy is meditation free from any fixed frame of reference. Oh, that's perfectly straightforward.
Keep going.
Pardon?
We can go home now.
I can't hear you, Larry.
We can go home now.
Yes, that's right. Be like a drop of water blending with the ocean, and become the ocean without altering it. Straightforward? No problem? Good?
Let's drop in.
So, in other words, goes on to say, furthermore, all the times while going about, sitting, shifting, moving, repeating mantras, speaking aloud, thinking or otherwise conducting yourself, without losing the perspective of you, you are aware that the world of appearance and possibilities is like an illusion. Without losing the indwelling confidence of your meditation, you're aware of your fundamental nature becoming evident. And without your conduct becoming careless, you rely correctly on the four kinds of authentic contact, which we'll be discussing later. So it goes through all of this, but the actual meditation instruction isn't very clear. So we go to the Book of All Answers. And the middle of the page, starting with Keho, this whole section to the end, pretty well. Gives the only kind of meditation instruction which, or practice instruction which is helpful here, which is, tells you what not to do. And the point here is to recognize that. For instance, in the third stanza, some people cut off the ebb and flow of thoughts and feelings and construct an emptiness practice corrupted by goal seeking. Skipping down a couple of a few lines, taking an intense dullness that conceals thoughts and feelings as the essence of practice, they are confused. Some use their ability to know movement as mind, to mull over the traces as thoughts and feelings ebb and flow. Anybody guilty here? Mm-hmm. Yes, we were talking about following ripples, right? P People who track arising and fading in stable meditation just spin in confusion, even if they practice for 100 years. This is why I'm not a big fan of observing. In general, work and effort alone just create opposition. It's exactly what I was pointing out with art. You aren't happy when you practice and you stir up all sorts of pains. When you don't practice, you don't know your own nature and wander in confusion. In either case, you fall away from what is natural and true. Be clear that the approach of meditation versus not meditation relies on an artificial distinction. Be present right now without trying to change or control anything. And this is basically what I've been encouraging you to do since the beginning of the retreat. No?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure I'm on message. Put a complete stop to any kind of scrutiny, control, or goal-seeking using conditioned states of mind. You have to be careful here. Suppose you find yourself thinking about the future. What do you do?
Useless planning.
Just notice it and let it be.
Just notice it and let it be. Now, sometimes when you notice it, it'll go. And that'll be that. Other times, it won't go poof. Now you be awake in the experience of thinking about the future.
In other words, the future could become the present.
No, that's a lovely conceptual understanding. Be awake in thinking about the future. Your present experience is thinking about the future. It isn't making the future the present. Okay. And you're awake in that. What this is like, I've never done this myself, is like riding a wave. There's a level of attention in which you're experiencing what is happening, and you are awake. You're not completely sucked into it, because then there's nothing. Now, inevitably, in just the way that I talked about Saraha, the bird flying from the ship, that future planning breaks up, dissolves, comes to an end. And you're right there. And the future planning is just something which arises. It's the play of mind. Now, it's useless thinking it is the play of mind.
If you're riding the wave, you experience
it. You experience it and you are awake in it. That's why you need a high level of attention, which is why I recommend you do either Guru Yoga or the primary practice on a regular basis, because that's what helps to raise the level of attention. Yes?
What comes to mind is when you're asleep and you're dreaming, and you're aware that you're dreaming, but you still keep doing the stuff that you're doing in your dream. Like sometimes when you become aware that you're dreaming, you change the dream, and sometimes when you become aware that you're dreaming, you just keep doing it,
yeah.
But you're aware that you're dreaming.
It's similar to that, yeah. Yeah. Direct awareness is no big deal and doesn't need any work.
I love this guy.
This is Jinpei Lingpa. Stop trying to change it or adjust it. How many of you spend your meditation practices trying to fine-tune that natural awareness? How's it going, Franca?
Oh, God. This is very funny because it's so true.
This is the line, verse we talked about before. Whenever conceptual thinking arises, don't look at what arises. Be what knows the arising. Got a sense of that writing? Like an oak stake in hard ground, stand firm in awareness that knows and go deep into the mystery. He's quite happy with that translation, actually.
That seems like you're doing something here, though. Stand firm.
I know, but you got to have a little poetic license here. Now, there are two approaches to this kind of practice. One is look at what arises, and the other is to look at what experiences the arising. Very broadly speaking, or some people say that in Mahamudra the emphasis is on looking at what arises, and Dzogchen the emphasis is on looking at what experience the arising. What's the difference? Carolyn?
No difference.
Why?
Because what experiences and the experience, you can't separate from the
That's right, thing. Yeah. Two different approaches, they end up in the same place. So certain ones will work, one approach will probably work better for some people, and the other approach will work better for others. That's how it is. And one isn't particularly better. Even though lots of people stand up on soapboxes and claim that it is.
didn't you recommend that in the case of dullness, that looking at what experiences the arising could be,
I did. You can also do it the other way. What is the dullness?
Mm.
What is the dullness? Minor question. What's the difference between knowing and emptiness? What is the difference between knowing and emptiness?
This is a minor question?
Yes, a minor question.
I really want the answer to that one because in the Dancer and Christine Awareness Practice.
The which?
Dancer.
Oh, that. Oh, okay, yeah.
Plant the root of mind in empty space.
In empty space, free from concept, plant the root of mind, which is awareness, plant the root and relax. That's not him, that's Sukhasiddhi. She is pointing to this guy.
I didn't say
he did. I thought you said she. He. Anyway. Okay. I thought I heard. Doesn't matter. Anyway, this is Sukhasiddhi's very famous pointing out instruction.
So what is the difference between
emptiness and knowing?
And knowing.
Awareness.
Okay, awareness, same diff.
Oh.
Isn't emptiness a quality of awareness?
There's one possibility. Nava.
No.
You want me to leave you alone?
Yeah.
Okay. Anita. Pardon?
Yes.
What's the difference? What's the difference between awareness and knowing? Awareness and emptiness.
Which?
Awareness and emptiness.
No difference.
How can that be? Guess what? You're on the spot to explain this to everybody. Aren't you glad you came tonight?
No.
You do have other plans.
How can it be?
Yeah.
It just is.
Anybody want to ask Anita about this?
Part of this is a language problem.
Awareness and emptiness.
Emptiness we experience as space in this room in our ordinary diluted way. So emptiness can mean two very different things. And awareness has at least a smidgen of overlap.
Smidgen? That's not what Anita's saying. Okay. You sure you don't want to do this?
No, please, be my guest.
So gracious. So kind. Okay. Look at awareness. What do you see? Anybody?
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay. Look at nothing. What do you experience? Look at nothing. What do you experience?
Awareness.
What?
Me.
Pardon?
Me.
Want to do that again?
Yeah.
Look at awareness. Look at what is aware. What do you see? Somebody said nothing, right? How many buy nothing? How big is this nothing? How big is this nothing?
Every.
I like that one. Well, compared to a red
how
box.
Big is it? Anybody?
Everything.
Pardon?
Everything.
Huh?
Forever.
Size 16. Good
okay.
To
double
D. Triple X.
Now, look at the nothing. What do you experience? Anybody?
Awareness.
Awareness. Yeah.
Experience being aware. So, maybe that'll be useful in your practice.
But why are you saying emptiness is nothing?
That's what you're paying for.
What?
Nothing.
That's a good deal.
£5.
Is there? Is there anything to emptiness?
Well, the literal word of emptiness, no, but I thought emptiness in Buddhism was terrible.
You know what the problem is there?
Content.
You thought. I have to emphasize in this kind of practice, trying to understand it doesn't work at all. It's totally experiential. And No, you can look at the sky. Or you can look at your awareness. Or you can look at your experience of anything. Not look at the thing. Look at the experience of the thing. You can use any of those three. Just rest there. Rest in the looking. Or you can rest and look in the resting. So the resting mind and the looking mind are the same. And that's it. As it says in the text, natural awareness is no big deal. Don't try to change it or adjust it. That's there all the time. You can't go out and get it. See if we can get copies of this made for before the end of the retreat. This is a song by Cher Gongpo called Recognizing Minded Guru. I'll just read one verse tonight because it's relevant. Or two verses. I can't see, hear, taste, smell, or touch you. You are not a thing, yet you are the source of all experience. Try as I may, there's nothing I can point to and say, that's you. But when I sit and don't look for you, you are present in everything. You are not subject to conditioning, good or bad, finer than everything. You don't attach to anything. Not being a thing, you are the basis of everything. Free from reasoning, you arise clearly when I don't reason. Okay? You've got a very good mind for thinking. Throw it away.
Bye.
What time?
8:34.
Okay. Gene?
You asked me to remind you.
Oh, yes. Thank you. It's not quite true that I haven't done that. But mine has no beginning. Well, yeah. Cher Gongpa. I gave it. Yeah. It's up on the website. Can you see if you can arrange coffees for everybody? It should have been in here, but July was a bad month, so missed that one. So Eugene asked about the phrase in the prayer saying, may I know that mine has no beginning. Yeah. Okay. this awareness that you experience right now. Where is it, Jean?
It's right here.
Where is here?
Nowhere.
Oh, okay. Where does it come from?
It's nowhere, it can't come from anywhere.
Yes, that's logic. But I want you to look and see, where does it come from? When you look for where it comes from, what do you see?
I really don't see anything.
Okay. Where does it go?
I don't know.
Okay. When did it begin? Is it not there before you look? And when you look, it begins? Is that how it is?
Well, I don't know when it began. But I do know I started looking when you asked me to look.
Yes. But the awareness, did it only come into being when you looked?
No.
So when did it begin?
I don't know.
When will it end? Awareness, mind, which has no beginning.
Why is it important to know that?
What happens to you when you rest in or connect with that awareness? What do you experience there? Do you experience confusion? Do you experience
being, I guess the way I can describe it.
Do you experience confusion? Do you experience disturbance? Maybe it has. Maybe it is important. Maybe, if you have a use for
it. Thank you.
It's related to the line before and after.
Which?
Energy to stop ordinary thinking.
Yes.
and to see samsara subside on its own.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, let's take a break and return for meditation.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you do wish to use a part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.